Hi, this is Tracy Hales-Vest with Right On Four Corners. Today, I'm talking with Dawn Roberts, author of The Wellness Toolbox, Debunking Myths About Fitness and Nutrition. Hi, Dawn.
Oh, hi.
Well, I really enjoyed reading Wellness Toolbox and learned a lot from it.
Oh, great. I appreciate you taking the time to read it.
Absolutely. So what made you write it?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I'm 52, and back in my 20s, I was getting my feet wet working at a gym. And I've just always been kind of an information junkie with fitness and nutrition. And I've started compiling data in my 20s, and if not sooner. And I had a gentleman who had written a book, actually, I think it was, I don't know if it was in the 60s or 70s, but he called is your Volkswagen a sex symbol? And he was on Johnny Carson and whatnot, and he used to frequent a gym that I worked at called Main Street Gym. And he came up to me one morning and he said, "You need to write a book." And he was very adamant about it. He said, "I'm going to help you." And he said, "We're going to go to the library and you need to develop an outline and whatnot." And we did that, and I sent it out to about 20 different publishers, and I heard back. No one was really interested, and it really wasn't the right time, and it wasn't the right subject matter, maybe. And it just became kind of put on the back burner for many, many years. And probably about 8 years ago or so, I really started doing some deep work, digging deep on a lot of different topics in nutrition and fitness. I've been a personal trainer and nutritional consultant for the last 28 years. And I thought, you know, I do so much stuff one-on-one. I think it's about time that I get this information out to the general public. And so that's how it began, and I wanted to do it different, and it is, as you can tell, it's very very different in the style of writing and whatnot. I think, especially in today's age, we kind of look for things in more tidbits, so I chose 80 different topics, and each thing's just a few pages. And
I like the format, the way it says, you bring up a point, says, is this a myth or is it a fact, and then dispute or uphold it.
Yeah, I want people to think about it a bit. Yeah, having to be curious and surprised. And
obviously, you've done a lot of research. There's sources in the back. How is it to keep up with all these changing myths in nutrition and fitness? I mean, it seems like every day there's something else.
Yeah, I guess to a degree. In the same token, there's a handful of things out there that have been. So the deep part of my book are things that I believe will always hold true. And so there's some other things in there maybe that may see some peaks and valleys. And and depending on who does the study, obviously, and if somebody has a particular interest in the study or money in the study. And so I try to be careful of the sites that I go to and articles that I read and make sure, you know, are things truly science-based?
Right.
Is it just someone's opinion? But you're right, there is so much confusing data out there, and that's another reason I wrote it, is because people get very confused and sometimes just give up because they don't know what to believe.
Right. I like the little cartoons in there, too.
Oh, thanks.
That kind of helps.
It's important to have some humor.
Absolutely. I like that you uphold Jack LaLanne as what he said was really true and works.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he really was a pioneer, and starting when he was a teenager, he was going through some difficult times, as I did, and, you know, he overcame that, and he was just, nutritionally as well, not just in his fitness, but, you know, the man basically stopped eating sugar when he was in his teens, and he just had some amazing things and lived to a ripe old age, and just was an incredibly inspiring and motivating figure for, you know, many, many decades.
Oh, yeah, he was childhood hero.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people nowadays don't even know who he is.
I know, that's too bad.
Especially the younger generation.
Right.
So I think it's important that they read about him.
And all these fad diets that people go through, I think you really debunked all that, that there's a basic.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things out there that'll work, right?
And
that's true with fitness, too, but The thing that's most important to me, and I've trained thousands of people over the last almost 30 years, is it realistic for their lifestyle? Is the food they eat and the workout that they're going to do, is it something they can stick with? Or is it something they're just going to do for a few weeks or a few months? Because my goal is to really change things around and help them to really look at food and fitness differently because of the effects that it has on the brain and the body. And then they can hopefully pass on that information to their family and friends and coworkers and such.
I like that you will allow me to have my glass of wine and my chocolate.
Absolutely. I actually do both of those almost every evening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really do.
That's good.
And, you know, a lot of people think that milk chocolate's fine. Well, milk chocolate has way too much sugar. And,
right.
I mean, I personally like a really high cocoa, which, you know, 85-90%. So mm-hmm. a lot of people, that may be a little too bitter. But as long as it's at least 70% is mm-hmm. my rule of thumb. And as long as you're not eating a whole bar, right?
Right.
You can have a few squares.
And that's all you're eating,
squares.
Right?
Yeah, you know, just like wine.
Exactly.
You know, I tell men, try to not do, you know, more than two glasses, and women, just one. We obviously have to manage what we put. what gets measured gets managed, right?
And yerba mate is something that you extol.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's been around a long, long time. I think it's relatively foreign to the U.S.
I think so.
I've been drinking it for about 10 years. And yerba mate is essentially a tea that we learned about through South America. And it's, you know, back in the 60s, I think it was the Pasteur Institute in Paris, essentially said it was one of the, you know, healthiest drinks on earth. And it has some amazing nutrients in it, theobromine and different vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and such. And a lot of gamers, a lot of younger people that do it for a living actually drink it because it has such an effect on the brain. You know, they say that it has, you know, let me think of how they say it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially kind of like chocolate, tea, and coffee all in one. But it really is fantastic, and it doesn't, for a lot of people, it doesn't give them that same, you know, for some people, coffee gives them the jitters.
Mm-hmm.
It can be pretty bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to put a little bit of honey and cinnamon in mine. And again, got to be careful that you don't overdo
right.
the honey. But yeah, it's an interesting drink. And just another one of those things. I like to alternate between coffee and yerba mate.
Yeah, that was news to me about that. And I appreciate you educating me on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could you read something from the Wellness Toolbox for us?
I shall. You know, I cover 80 different things, and it's got so much information. I thought about this.
Yes.
And I'll just say this. I call it You Reap What You Sow, and as an acronym. So SEW, capital S, capital E, capital W. As you've already read, the most important thing is sleep.
Right.
I tell people straight up, I own a gym, but more important than your workout, more important than nutrition, is how much sleep you're getting. And as an adult, 18 and older, we need 7 to 9 hours of quality sleep. And
right.
if we're not getting that, there's just a host of problems that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the second most important thing would be our eating. And the last, actually, in my opinion, is the exercise. So it's sleep, and that's how we eat, and that's how we exercise, or the W would be our workout, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to read to you from, it's page 300. And it's essentially talking about nutrition, and it's how close our gut and brain connection is.
Oh, good.
And so I'll just read it, and it's about a little over 2 pages.
Great.
So here we go. What's going on in our gut could be affecting our brain, and vice versa. If you've ever felt butterflies in your stomach, when nervous or gone with your gut to make a decision, you're probably getting signals from your second brain. Lying in the walls of your digestive system, this brain in your gut, is transforming medicine's understanding of the connection between mood, digestion, and health, and even the way you think. Anxiety, anger, sadness, elation, all of these feelings and more can generate symptoms in the gut. Just thinking about eating releases digestive juices before food gets there, and a troubled intestine can send signals to the brain. It's difficult to heal a distressed gut without considering stress and other emotions. Called the enteric nervous system, ENS, this second brain comprises more than 100 million nerve cells lining your gastrointestinal tract from esophagus to rectum. Incapable of making decisions like our big brain, the main role of the ENS is controlling digestion. The enteric nervous system doesn't seem capable of thoughts as we know it, but it communicates back and forth with our big brain with profound results. And that's according to Jay Pashrita, MD, director of Johns Hopkins Center for Neurogastroenterology, whose research has gathered international attention. A new scientific study from the University of Cambridge reveals that changes in the microbiome, gut bacteria, may control many aspects of human health. Our gut bacteria actually outnumbers our cells by a staggering factor of 10 to 1. With 40 trillion bacteria in the body, most are in the intestines. Unfortunately, things like antibiotics and chlorinated water deplete our microbiome. The foods you eat greatly affect the health of your gut and subsequently your brain. Science-based ways to improve your gut bacteria. Eat a variety of foods. There are hundreds of different species of bacteria in the gut, with each requiring different nutrients. The more species of bacteria you have, the greater the health benefits. A diet rich in whole foods establishes better gut health. Eat lots of vegetables, beans, legumes, and fruit. High in fiber, these foods stimulate gut bacterial growth. Eat fermented foods. Fermenting typically involves yeast and bacteria converting the sugars in food to organic acids or alcohol. Sauerkraut, kimchi, tempeh, kombucha, yogurt, and kefir are all examples. Make sure you choose low-sugar varieties. Don't eat artificial sweeteners. Some studies have shown they negatively affect gut health. Eat whole grains. Foods like quinoa, oats, millet, barley, spelt, brown rice, teff, rye, and others promote healthy intestinal bacteria. Eat foods rich in polyphenols. These are plant compounds with many health benefits, including reductions in cholesterol, inflammation, blood pressure, and oxidative stress. Almonds, blueberries, broccoli, dark chocolate, grapes, green tea, and red wine are all good sources. Take a probiotic supplement when ill. These live microorganisms temporarily help to colonize our gut with bacteria. In sick people, this can be beneficial. However, a review of 7 studies found that probiotic supplements have little effect on the gut of healthy individuals. And the quote is, "Every day we live and every meal we eat, we influence the great microbial organ inside us, for better or for worse." Gilia Enders, a German scientist and author, and who wrote Gut 2014.
That's amazing.
So that's just one of the 80 things that I've got in there.
One of the 80, right. And that's the correlation between brain and the little brain, the gut. And then how does, in that picture, where does the fitness, the physical fitness fit?
Yeah, so I just tell people, look, once you get your sleep in order, or try to, and they all help each other, right? So once people start becoming more fit, they tend to sleep better. So it does become a cycle. They all interrelate.
Mm-hmm.
But I start off with doing nutritional counseling with people before I prefer that anyway, if they're open to it, before I get into their training program. But the fitness component is also very confusing to people because they think that eating on a treadmill and riding a bike just, you know, for hours on end, and that cardiovascular exercise is the secret to losing the weight. And they're shocked when I tell them that really weight training will get them there much faster.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, interesting, the programs that I design, it's really imperative that people do big compound movements when they weight train. So in other words, a lot of people try to isolate muscle groups,
right?
Whether that's inner or outer thighs or biceps or triceps, or many people still believe that they can spot reduce fat, which isn't so. It's impossible to do with the exception of liposuction, of course, which I don't recommend. So these big movements, squats and lunges and rowing and chest presses and lat pulls and overhead pressing and planks, and these movements that recruit lots of muscle fiber are going to increase the metabolism substantially. And weight training is the only thing I know of, especially when it's partnered with another, when you do a circuit or you partner a couple different big exercises together, that builds bone, builds muscle, burns fat, and works your heart and lungs. So many people think of weight training as not being aerobic or not getting the heart rate up. But by all means, you can and should, and if it's done in the proper manner, it works great. And so you can save a ton of time and reap amazing benefits. Strength is an incredibly powerful tool, and it's so invigorating to know that you can, change that tire on your car by yourself, or pick up that 50-pound bag of dog food, or pull that hose across the lawn, or split wood, or we tend to sit so much, we forget how important all those things are. But I really encourage people to not spend too much time just doing cardiovascular work. It's really important to do both. If you're really pressed for time, there's just a handful of exercises you need to do, and of course I talk about them in the book. And even if you're just spending 10, 15 minutes a day, every other day doing it, you can see substantial results.
Well, I found it interesting, your 13-minute workout, where you use the maximum weight and lift to exhaustion of the muscle, and that should be sufficient.
Yeah, the studies show that. I mean, I prefer doing longer than that, but there's times where I don't have the time to do that.
Right.
And so I may just do some burpees or some jumping jacks, and then I might get down on the ground and do push-ups to failure, and then maybe some walking lunges to failure. Or again, our ideas of what works many times are upside down from what the facts really show. We get caught up in all the magazines and all the hoopla online, and we need to get back to some basics. And women, for instance, as you read, they also think that they need to do these different exercises than men and do high repetitions. And the truth of the matter is that our muscular system, men's and women's, is almost identical. So those same exercises that work for me work for you. Women think that if they lift heavy weight, they're going to get big and bulky like a man, and it just isn't so most of the time, unless they have an unusual disorder or hormone imbalance, or, and genetics certainly play a role as well. So if a woman is already, let's just say, endomorphic and tends to be fairly big bone and carries a fair amount of weight, I can't, if she already has, let's just call it that, sort of pear shape or apple shape, I probably can't make her into that banana shape or more ectomorphic. We don't change the genes that we are given at birth, but we can hype them, certainly remold them to a degree.
And women on weights is a great thing for osteoporosis prevention.
Exactly. Absolutely. I think it's the best thing. And, particularly leg movements, big movements, and there's many different types of squats that a person can do. Some they would be comfortable with and some they would not. A lot of times when I say squats, people just envision a bar across their back, and that's not comfortable for a lot of people. So it may be a kettlebell between the legs, or a dumbbell and doing more of a sumo style squat or deadlift motion. It's amazing what can happen. I've seen it with people from 13 years old to over 90 years old. Just absolutely astonishing results.
I like your food pyramid too. It's a little bit different than the standard government one.
Yeah, a lot of these pyramids that you see were, let's just say, designed because of maybe money put in the back pockets of different individuals. It could have been somebody in the dairy industry. It could be somebody in the wheat industry. Who knows? But I've just found that over time that one works best for the majority of my clients and myself.
So what are your thoughts on gluten?
That's a really good question. I've tried to stay away from gluten, and I think bread is very different nowadays than it used to be, and some people claim, it's because of different enzymes, and, wheat is not the way it was back in biblical times, and nor are other gluten grains, whether that be barley or rye. So my opinion is that two things. I think people should try to stay away from it, but they also should be extremely mindful that foods that are gluten-free are not their answer to losing weight, because so many of these gluten-free foods are void of the fiber and the other nutrients that we need. And so if they're eating them, their body is just going to still be hungry and tired. It's going to still make them fat. So gluten-free is not an excuse to go overboard, whether that's on a pizza crust or bread or tortilla or what have you. Mm-hmm. There are some products out there with all those that I would really be mindful and search for ones that have the most fiber, because fiber, protein, and fat is what's going to really curb our appetite, gives us the most satiation. And that's very important, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's so many of these things. You know, I think the average person eats about 300 to 400 more calories than they did back in the 70s. And so we have a serious epidemic on our hands, if you didn't know that, with obesity and even childhood obesity. So, you know, everything from diabetes to cancer to arthritis and heart disease, and it's unbelievable. And it affects all of us in one way or another, whether that's sitting on an airplane next to someone that you might be uncomfortable next to, or the very fact that our healthcare costs are going through the roof.
The combination of fitness and good nutrition makes for an all-over better person.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It really does. And, you know, the better you feel, the better attitude you're going to have at work, the better you're going to handle your spouse or your mate, your children. Your outlook on life's going to be different. You're going to sleep better. And it just becomes this wonderful circle that that affects, each thing affects the other. It's really how we're designed to be, in my opinion. It's, you know, people are looking for these pills and powders and potions that are going to make them feel fantastic. I really encourage them to stay away from them, because not only are they a waste of money, but that elation, so to speak, that they might feel is going to be short-lived.
And you have a section even on, if you do have cancer, what's the best things to do for that, nutritionally speaking?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that over 90% of cancer really deals with our lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
So, the foods we eat play just a huge role in our lifestyle. You know, we shouldn't be exercising next to a roadway, for instance, that's probably, you know, has a lot of toxins. We should probably be working in a paint factory, things of that nature. But cancer foods, you know, we should try to stay away from foods that are heavily sprayed.
Right.
We should try to stay away from soy, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Soy can certainly be an issue. Pasteurized, you know, whey protein powders and eggs and lemon, salmon and artichokes and broccoli and beets and dandelion green, you know, a lot of the fermented foods like sauerkraut and kimchi that I was talking about earlier, that's good for our gut. That's super important. Radishes and leeks and, turmeric, green apples and onions and ginger and walnuts. And I mean, I've got them all in there. And even the dark chocolate that we discussed, as long as it's a low sugar variety. And even the red wine, if it's a good quality organic red wine, that can even be helpful. As long as people aren't overdoing it.
Right,
If they're overdoing the liquor, that can actually send the cancer down the wrong road. Yeah, so there's different types of mushrooms and peppers and green tea, ginseng, aloe. There's a number of different things that work, and I actually have a friend who's a naturopathic oncologist, if you will, Nasha Winters, who wrote a tremendous book called The Metabolic Approach to Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And She's here in the Four Corners and just a wonderful person. She's a 2-time survivor of stage 4 cervical cancer.
Wow.
And she travels all around doing talks. She actually gave a talk at Johns Hopkins University a few years ago to roughly 100 different doctors from around the country, and talking about many of these things that I just said. And so it's very powerful. You know, and I've got my own opinions on drugs that I won't get into right now, but you know, we can cure ourselves from a lot of ailments. Our body's designed to, if we give it the right nutrients and one thing we didn't talk about was sunshine. I think sunshine is incredibly important as well. We tend to fear the sun, and even though we shouldn't be getting burned, right? Sunburn's not healthy, but we need some quality sunshine without with minimal clothes on and before you put some type of sunblock on, which that's a whole other issue there.
Right.
So many of these sunblocks contain all kinds of ingredients that can be more harmful to you than the sun is.
Right.
So, you know, the skin is such a huge organ that absorbs those things. And if if we're just lathering ourselves up with all these different chemicals, my goodness, I would venture to say that you're going to get cancer a lot faster doing that than you are from being out in the sun. Again, I talk about that too. There's a lot of stuff.
You cover a lot. Absolutely, and it's very informative. And the one thing that you've alluded to is how bad sugar is.
Oh, my goodness. You know, and there's a lot of hidden studies that kind of like the cigarette industry, to be honest with you. But many decades ago, you know, essentially they took fat out of food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to make something taste good, what are you going to replace it with? Well, they replaced it with sugar.
Right.
Sugar is incredibly cheap, especially the high fructose corn syrup, which is arguably the worst of the worst. But sugar really has no nutritional value, so it's empty calories, it's absorbed very quickly. Almost all disease, in my opinion, thrives on sugar. Diabetes thrives on sugar,
mm-hmm.
arthritis thrives on sugar, heart disease thrives on sugar, cancer thrives on sugar. I don't know if you knew that, but if you take away glucose, cancer has a very hard time surviving, which is one of the reasons a keto diet works very well for cancer.
Oh.
I don't prescribe it to the general population just because it can be very difficult. Again, it goes back to the whole, you know, what's realistic for that client. But I mean, I'll tell you right now that if I got cancer, I would do keto in a heartbeat.
Very interesting.
Yeah, there's some really, really, really strong science out there that talks about that. And again, the book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, that Dr. Nasha Winters and her colleague, Kelly is the last name, but I believe. But yeah, she talks about it in great detail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very, very powerful. And we need to realize that so many of these diseases carry with them a lot of jobs, carry with them a lot of money. I tell people this, and I really believe it, that I don't think you're ever going to see a cure for cancer because there's too many jobs, there's too much money, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Yes,
and,
yes.
We have to take care of our own health. That's all there is to it. I really appreciate you having me on, Tracy, and talking about Wellness Toolbox. It's an exciting time. I've been filling a lot of books in the four corners. And
good.
I appreciate you taking the time to read it.
And people can find your website at fit247gym.com.
Correct. Yeah, and gym as in G-Y-M.
Right.
That's correct. And if they ever want to call me or talk to me, my phone number is 970-749-8663. I do a lot of private training. I do different talks and clinics. I just did a talk the other evening, Tuesday evening, at the Durango Public Library. Yeah, so it's an exciting time. And believe it or not, I'm even working on a second book as we speak. But that probably won't be out for a couple of years.
Well, we'll look for that. In the meantime, Wellness Toolbox is rich with information. And thank you, Don.
Thank you so much, Tracy. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed our time.
As did I. And that was Don Roberts speaking to us from Durango about his book, Wellness Toolbox, Debunking Myths About Fitness and Nutrition. This is Tracy Hales Vass, right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.